Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello and happy hump night from somewhere in middle America. Hope you guys are having a good week. You've probably heard on the news, if you haven't been part of it, about the heat wave sweeping the Middle West, and it certainly has been. It's been like a heat index of 109 degrees. I was joking with my friend in Arizona where, you know, it gets to be 112, 115, but theirs is quote-unquote dry heat. A big joke. And of course, we're not in the Midwest. You walk outside and your clothes are instantly wet and sticking to your body. I'm going to have to ask our guest tonight because she knows what I'm talking about. She was in Kansas before she moved to Florida. I'm assuming it might be similar, but I don't know, and I'm kind of interested. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We Recovery program because it is in the We that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Now, for those of you who have been listening for a while, you're well acquainted with Dr. Maria Romanes. She's been, I'll call her a co-host off and on with me for a lot of different shows, very much appreciated. And we're going to talk tonight about reasonable accommodations in the workplace. And this was something the Americans with Disabilities Act outlined in the program notes, and then I'm going to bring her right on because she's got an early morning meeting and will be leaving in an hour. I want you to make sure to check the program notes. This is the show, as you know, is posted all over all kinds of social media groups, but you can always find the program notes or the link to the show, which starts out the title tonight, Dr. Maria on Reasonable Work Accommodations After BI for Brain Injury on Recovery Now. I have an ADA.org fact sheet on what are considered some reasonable accommodations in the workplace, a telephone number to the ADA National Network, and a number and website for the job accommodation line. Now, there's a lot of people who aren't able initially and maybe not at all to go back into the workplace. At the same time, there are people who suffer brain injury who really want to get back out into the workplace but maybe can't do what they did before. In Dr. Maria's case, and then I'm going to unmute her right this minute, is she had a plan, like we all had a plan, and her plan changed just a little bit. she was going to be a different kind of doctor. But is a doctor of pathology? I'll let her do a brief stanza on that if she'd like to. But that's what some people do. They decide to go back into the workforce. Maybe, like, I wouldn't be able to do what I did before my brain injury. So I would have to tweak my skill set towards something that I could handle. And then there's others where that's just not possible. But the work accommodations, reasonable work accommodations, were meant to help us, people with a disability, to be able to be accepted back into the workplace, or forced to be accepted back into the workplace. And like anything with the ADA or any other government document, it's as good as the teeth there are to enforce it. It's great to have anything written down in a bill or an act or whatever it might be, but we have to make sure there's some teeth in it. But in any case, we were very fortunate when this was put into the ADA to help support those who want to get back into the workplace. So with that, I'm going to bring on Dr. Maria, and we'll talk about that tonight. Hello. Welcome back, Dr. Maria.
Hello. Kim, when I said that I was going to talk about these reasonable accommodations, I was hoping by now I would have them in place. I have been thinking about doing them for a long time. And I met with the chief of staff, who's the supervisor for all the doctors, and asked him if he would support me in getting reasonable accommodation, because my threatened that I would lose my job if I did. He said, you have to be careful what you ask for, because it's up to me whether I give it to you or not. And you could be, you know, you could be reading charts for insurance, you know, for insurance purposes, and you're not going to be getting paid what you are now. And that was in April. And actually, I had tried to ask for accommodations in July 2018, 4 years ago. And basically, the head of HR is a lawyer and reached out to my service chief and said, we can't have a pathologist who's cognitively disabled. And is putting the hospital at risk for a lawsuit. And he basically strong-armed me into withdrawing my reasonable accommodation. And so that's the first thing I would like to talk about. What is the difference between cognitive impairment and cognitive disability? Okay.
Before we do that, this is really important. I hold that thought, don't lose it, but I want to give people an example just really quick, because those things both sounded litigious to me, that they would take the posture that they did. But what types of accommodations are generally considered reasonable? Change job tasks, provide reserve parking, improve accessibility in a work area, change the presentation of tests and training materials, provide or adjust a product, equipment, or software. I thought of you, Dr. Maria, because we talked a little about this before, allow a flexible work schedule. And that was something that we talked about, a little bit. Maybe it wasn't even on here, but, you know, a lot of people, I'm just using an example, that do what she does, where she works. Let's just say they work 8 to 5. Dr. Maria gets her work done, but in all the years that I've known her, and in fact, right now she's at work, and it's 10:10 p.m. where she lives. And so what I've seen her do that none of the 8-to-5ers do is put in the same, if not more, hours in order to meet her objectives and get her work, quote-unquote, finished by going in on the weekends, by several nights a week, going home, maybe eating dinner, taking a breather, whatever, and then going back and working really late. And especially now with the cost of gas and everything, you know, the fivers are pretty damn lucky. So anyway, there's different type of accommodations, and some are physical. Chronic stress and anxiety disorders, this doesn't necessarily apply to Dr. Maria, but those are also covered by the ADA. And so I just wanted to talk about what some of the reasonable accommodations just for the people listening can be to go back to work. And one of them I thought of with you was about the hours, because I know you had mentioned to me that, you know, some of the others, I don't know, had attitude or whatever, because you weren't there in the same 8-to-5 slot they were. And I was infuriated by hearing that, because I've to you, you know, Dr. Maria and I have never met in person, but she's been on the show and I've known her for years, and she is always at work. I mean, she's been home a couple times, but it's been after she's gone back in to work or stayed really, really late at work or been at work over the weekend, and all of this to get the same amount of work done that these other people are doing in 8-to-5. So she's had a reasonable accommodation that I guess they've allowed you to have. But what other kind of accommodation were you thinking about, or is it still an extension of that and they're threatening to make you sharpen pencils instead of be a pathologist? Now I'm going to turn it over for you to talk. I just wanted to give a little background, that's all, to the audience about reasonable accommodations and what they entail.
Well, I have been working here for 7 years, and I have done so without formal accommodation. Okay. As far as my working excess hours, okay, so let me just tell you what I'm doing. I am a pathologist and I am on staff at a VA hospital. And what that means is I make whatever comes from anybody's body, a pap smear, urine, blood, you know, biopsies, surgical specimens, you know, those, you know, depending on the day, okay, I will get, you know, various types of cases, okay, from patients, okay, and so it's my job to examine, you know, to examine, like, if I get a colon, so I would be involved in the initial diagnosis of like a colon cancer. So the GI doctor goes in, sees a mass, takes a biopsy, sends it to me. I look at it, I describe it, I put it into a cassette.
You're breaking up just a little bit. There.
A week or so later, the surgeon will, you know, will go in and remove part of the colon and send me the piece of colon at each end. The ends are stapled, but and so I remove the staples from the ends. I incise the length of the colon. I open it up. I see the tumor. I take sections of little tissue pieces, showing how far the tumor is going in through the wall, if it's going to the margins, you know, all the different areas of the tumor, and how it relates to the normal mucosa around it, the normal tissue around it. And then after I've done that, I clip off, there's fat attached to the colon. I clip off all the fat. I put it into this solution overnight. And the next day I search it to find the lymph nodes. And when I get all the slides back, put a report together that says, you know, the type of cancer, the size of the tumor, how deep it's gone into the wall, are the margins negative, are there lymph nodes involved, is there perineural invasion. So it's very detailed, comprehensive, and very important work. And the one thing about the pathologist is never allowed to guess. Okay.
No.
You know, you go to your doctor and you've got a lump in your neck and they'll say, well, you know, it's probably an infection. Give you an antibiotic, you know, come back in a couple of weeks if it doesn't go away, right? Well,
right.
In my job, my customers are not really the patients themselves. They are the doctors and the surgeons for the patients, okay? So I report to the doctors and surgeons, okay?
But you're actually giving them everything that they tell us the patient is coming from the work that you've done and written up. That's they wind up telling us, what kind of cancer
exactly.
We have, how invasive it is,
yes.
What kind of treatment plans there might be. So they're actually getting most of their information from the pathologist to repeat
exactly.
To the patient.
Yeah, so the initial diagnosis and then also the staging, okay, the staging of the tumors. So is it stage 3, stage 4, you know, all this different stuff, okay? So
right.
It's very exacting work, okay? And when we are fully staffed, there's supposed to be 6 pathologists and our chief. They call, at the VA, we call the supervisor a service chief, okay? But and when we are all here, when there's 6 pathologists and the chief, I can handle my job without accommodation. Okay. I mean, I've done it for 7 years. Okay. But, but the thing is this job has been a bit of a revolving door for pathologists. So every year I started in 2015, there were 6 pathologists and a chief. I was one of 6, every one of those pathologists and now the chief. And one of the positions has been twice. Okay. So right now, we are functioning with 4 pathologists and an acting chief, okay? So we are now 2 pathologists down, okay? So right now, the other pathologists typically work a, you know, 8.5-hour day, okay, from 8 to 4:30, or, you know, 8 to 5, 8, 4, 30, 8 to 5, that sort of thing, okay? Very, very rarely does someone work beyond that, okay? But for me to do the same amount of work, you know, when we're fully staffed, it takes me about 50 to 55 hours, okay? Why? Because of my cognitive impairments, okay? I have to be, you know, more careful, okay? Because, you know, my cognitive impairment, like attention, you know, it's like attention deficit disorder, that type of thing. If I'm not, I've got to pay really close attention, you know, to everything, okay, to make sure I have the right slide for the right case, I'm writing on the right paper, I'm putting in the right the right report, in the right, you know, in the, I mean, all of that. You could do everything right about a case, but if you've messed up which patient you've given it to, and there's so many
right.
places where this can happen along the way, okay? So, you know, those points at which the errors can happen, I pay really close attention in those moments to make sure I get it right, okay?
I'll bet you do, so because you know that you have vulnerabilities. Anybody understaffed or just overworked, maybe they haven't had a brain injury, which Dr. Maria has, for those of you that don't know. She's one of us. That's what we're talking about. But even somebody who hadn't had that could go through the same thing and not be as mindful as you, because you know ahead of time that you've got to be extra careful and mindful because of the challenges that you have, where someone else might be, like I said, going through a divorce or something going on in their life, or just overworked. They didn't get enough sleep the night before. They could make the same mistakes and not be as mindful because they're kind of going by rote, you know, in their job function, where I would think, you know, you would be a little more mindful knowing. But, and then I'm going to let you go on, but all I could think, I'm still going back to what the two people had to say to you. And I guess one thing to me is you made it through the same educational standards as everyone else there. And one other thing I wanted to say, you've been in your current job for 7 years, but you were a pathologist how many years before that, a doctor of pathology, when you were here in the Midwest? So you
altogether,
have...
I've been working as an attending pathologist since 2006, okay? So 16 years altogether, okay? I worked for LabCorp. 1 year I worked for LabCorp and KU, the University of Kansas. And then the next 8 years I worked at the Kansas City VA. And the last 7 years I've worked at the Bay Pines VA, okay? So in Florida. So in any case, one thing that's very different about my current job that I never had to face in Kansas City is the whole time I was there, we had a stable pathology staff. I was one of five when we started, okay? No one left the whole time I was there. I came in 2007. I left in 2015. No one had left, and in fact, we added a position. So
what's the problem in Florida that the turnover is so massive?
There are a lot of issues, and I really don't want to go into it, but bad management for one, okay? And then also work, you know, that we don't have enough support staff. There's a lot. I don't know if it's the work ethic. Okay. I mean, I do see some extent of not, you know, I'm not saying everybody, but a few individuals, okay, that are filling spots, okay, here that cannot compare people that do transcription, okay, the reports that you need to dictate the reports and they transcribe the reports. In Kansas City, you know, we had solid, you know, people. We would have two transcriptionists. And then everything that you gave them by 3 o'clock, there'd be two other people that would kick in at 3 o'clock, and all the reports would be out by 4:30. All of the reports we put in by 3. But here, most of the report, like 99% of all the reports that I've signed out, I have entered the reports myself. Okay, either with, you know.
So your job description has included two job descriptions,
if
it were in the Midwest.
And
there's not a beach for people to skip school for in Kansas, is there, like there is in Florida?
Yeah. So
I'm sorry.
At all. One person left, okay, the other person just had a heart attack. She had a triple bypass surgery, and she may not be coming back. Fortunately, about a year and a half ago, we got some voice recognition, Dragon, and that does help, okay? That does help, and we don't absolutely have to have them, you know, the way we used to. So, and thank God, okay? But still, I'm having to do a lot of parts of the job that I didn't have to do in Kansas City. And then the other thing is, like, when I would order recuts or stains or something like that in Kansas City, if I ordered it by 10 o'clock, I would have it by the end of the day. Well, here, we've been short two histologists, you know, we've been functioning with four out of six pathologists. We've been functioning with two short histologists. That these are the people who prepared the slides and the stains and all that. We've been short two for 3 years, okay? And I don't know why we don't need to hire, okay? So the histologists are working incredibly long hours as well. And so it's you know, and then the pathologists are having to cut in their own cases. And when you're doing like 20 or 30 cases, that's fine. But we're getting, when we're on to receive surgicals, it used to be that there was a 45 case limit. Then they made it 50, and then there were more than 50 cases coming in a day. So right now we're sending some of them out to Quest for Quest to gross them. Then the slides come back, and then we read them and issue the reports. So it divides it into different, you know, we're not doing any less work. We're just, you know, it's a very demanding job. And the pathologists who've left have left because they don't want to gross that much. They found a better job opportunity in private where it paid better. Another person was sick of, you know, asking for leave and the service chief saying no, 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 no. There's, you know, frustrations, okay? And the thing is, I stay because I live 5 minutes away, okay? That's one thing about the gas. I'm paying, you know, twice as much to fill my gas tank, but I live 5 minutes away, and that's part of my compensation strategy is that, you know, I live close enough to work so that I can come back and, you know, work a few more hours or come in, you know, and it's not like I would rather spend, you know, a couple of hours at work rather than having a couple of hours on the road, okay? And but like I said, I take, you know, people with brain injury who succeed do so because they're putting out more effort, okay? I'm reading from a book that talks about, it's called Head Injury Recovery in Real Life. And it's written by Larry Schutz, who's the neuropsychologist who I did my rehab with. And we've talked about that before. You know, the number one lesson learned from the, you know, he wrote about 30 remarkable recoveries, okay, and what he learned from them. And the number one key to success is effort, okay, putting out the effort, okay. And so because anything that we do, we're having to work, and I'm going to read this quote. Because of the injury, I have to work twice as hard as the normal person to get the results I want. If I had to credit my recovery to a single strategy, that's it. Do the amount of work that's necessary to get good results. In summarizing her philosophy of recovery, Brooke, this is one of the people in this book, put even greater emphasis on effort. Because of the injury, I have to work twice as hard as the average person to get what I want. If I had to credit my recovery to a single strategy, that's it. Do the amount of work that's necessary to get good results. I can't just stick to the strategies I developed up to this, changing how I do things. You'll be adjusting to things all your life. And so basically, I accept it as part of my life that I have to work probably 25% longer than anybody else normally, okay? And I, you know, what the other people do in their 42 and a half hours a week, you know, I'm happy if I can get it done in between 50 and 55 hours, okay? And I can do that when we're fully staffed. So when we're short one person, or when we're short two people like we are right now, I'm working 60 plus hours right now. And the thing is, you know, I don't mind working up to 60 hours if I, you know, now and then if I need to. But if I'm working 60 plus and I'm still not getting the work done, then, you know, and I'm, you know, I get tired, I start not being able to sleep, I start having to use some heavy sleep medication and all that. And so that's why I wanted to ask for reasonable accommodation, is to prevent, you know, so this is what I was asking for, okay? Number one, that might, okay, so the others, I'm sorry, despite, so everybody's doing, let's say we're down two pathologists out of six. So each person is probably doing, you know, 25-30% more work. We have some fee basis people coming in. So, but let's say the others are still able to get their work done in the normal work day 95% of the time, even when we're understaffed, okay? But for me, my 50 to 50 hours becomes 60 to 65 when we're one person down, okay, and 65 to 70 when we're two people down. And I've worked even 80 or 90 hours on some weeks, okay, and I'm not saying every week, but maybe one or, you know, I did in December, I worked one week, I worked 81 hours. I came in on the weekend, I put 27 hours in just over the weekend. So I have to, like, go through, you know, that's, you know, the others are still able to absorb it. I can't. The reason I can't is because I have to do everything slow and meticulous, okay? I can't speed up, okay? I'm like the Volkswagen bug, okay? Volkswagen bug, speed up, you know, it has a maximum, you know, speed on the highway, you know, 55. Everybody else is going, you know, 65 miles an hour, but, you know, I'm going 55, okay? And as long as, you know, it's going to take me a little bit longer to get to the destination that the others do, and that's fine, okay? But if you're having to go, you know, 90 miles instead of 65 miles in an hour, the others are still able to do it because their brains are like Ferraris or Porsches, you know? They're still able to do it and barely bat an eye, okay? They're complaining. They're complaining about how hard they're working, but they're still able to do it, okay? So, you know, one of the things that my current service chief, she's acting, you know, she said, you know, why are you asking for this reasonable accommodation? Because it's putting stress on her, you know, and she's like, why do you need this? And I'm like, well, you know, normally takes me 50 to 55 hours to get my work done. Now that we're two people down, I'm working, you know, 63, 65 hours a week, and I'm not able to stay caught up. And I said the others are still able to get their work done in 42 and a half hours. And she said, well, the others put out the time and effort to get their work done in the normal work day. And I'm like,
so basically she's a government employee who doesn't know shit about the government. Americans with Disabilities Act.
She's got an MD and PhD like I do, but she's, you know, she sees that, you know, they see that, you know, I have kind of like this steady pace. And in their mind, they think I should be able to put the pedal to the metal. And, you know, but I can't. When I start doing that, I start having slip-ups, okay? And I had a couple slip-ups happen in May. And I was like, you know, I was just having to function too fast, okay? And I caught my mistake the next morning. It was, you know, the cytotech had called it negative. I had found a few atypical cells, and I had written down asked if atypical squamous cells of undetermined significance. It was a borderline case, okay? But I released the report. The side effect had put it, had already put her answer into the report, and I thought that I had changed it. Okay, and it was a pap test, and the, and we were having HPV coming back. The results come back, and the next workday, the HP results came back, and one was positive, and I said, oh, I bet it's that case. And it was that case, but I hadn't changed it from negative to ascus, okay? I mean, in reality, if I called it negative and HPV positive came back, or if I called it ascus and HPV positive came back, it would have meant the same thing for the patient. There was, would have been no impact on patient care. They would have been handled the same way. But the fact is, it freaked me out, okay? And that day, paperwork for the reasonable accommodations, like, you know, I'm, you know, I just...
And what would that be, Maria, in this case? What would the reasonable accommodation you're asking for be?
So, okay, so what I was asking for is, number one, that my work be, even when we're short-staffed, okay, that my work be limited to that of a full-time pathologist when fully staffed. I can do my job. I can't
Thank
do,
you.
Okay. I can't do...
Yeah.
I can't take an extra load on without decompensating, okay? I mean, since November, we've been functioning with one person down, okay? In December, and we haven't had that replacement come. Her replacement's not coming till September, okay? And then the end of November, one of the pathologists had a heart attack. So he was out December and January. So we were two people short then, okay? And then he came back.
But it's been
okay.
2 years since you've been fully staffed.
It's been
Somebody...
since November that we were fully staffed, okay? And the, and
okay.
last year, we didn't become fully staffed until February. So we had, like, from February to November, we had, like, 9 months of full staffing, okay?
Right.
And during the month, those weeks, I was working 50 to 55. I have my records, okay?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The moment that Julie left, the dermatopathologist, she left, okay, you know, I started working 60 right away, okay? And since the my service chief actually was he's been assigned someplace else in the hospital for a temporary assignment. So whatever, I don't want to comment any more on that. But so yeah, now we're functioning two people down, and I'm putting in regularly. I've kind of made my personal limit 63 hours, but you know, I wanted to. The thing is, the acting chief told me you can't ask for less work. And I'm like, I'm not asking for less excess work, okay?
Right,
I can't do
exactly.
That. I can't right. do that. It's not, you know, asking for less work is not an accommodation, okay? And I went through, you know, I had a long weekend. Beginning of June, I was in Kansas City and had a long weekend. And then during that time, I read, you know, a bunch of legal stuff about this, and I can ask for less work. They don't necessarily have to give it to me. So what I focused on was, you know, trying to maximize my energy, okay, to run my brain, okay, because what happens is, you know, my brain is underpowered, okay. I can never, you know, I mean, first of all, it's like when you plug me in overnight, my battery never gets to 100%, okay? It only goes
right.
up to like 75%, okay?
Yeah.
And then during the workday, my mind is, you know, less efficient, okay? So I'm using more energy to do the same amount of work, okay, per unit of work than anybody else is. So I run out of energy. And it used to be that I had, you know, there are 2 days a week that I'm on call for different services. On those days, I have to be here at 8, okay? But there were 3 days a week where I wasn't on call, and my tour of duty for, like, 3 years was 10:30 on those days. So on those days, I pretty much was able to come with eight hours of sleep, for sure, okay? And so I was able to get through my day and not be tired, okay, you know, at the end of a shift, okay? And then, you know, I could work 8.5 hours and not be tired, okay? But my boss, my old service chief, kind of out of retaliation, okay, I don't want to get into all that, but there was something that happened in December where I reported him to the union. And kind of out of retaliation, the next week he says, oh, you know, you have to change your work, your tour duty to 8:30. Nobody else has a 10:30 start of tour. And, you know, I've been told that I have to do this. And I don't believe him, actually. I don't believe him. But anyway, he said 8:30. And so then I started, you know, instead of coming into work, you know, on 3 days a week with 8 hours, well, I'm coming into work every day, like with 6 or 6.5 hours. And actually the new acting chief just made it 8 o'clock for everyone. Okay. So I was like, I was asking, one of the things I was asking was for was a later tour of duty. Okay. And when she first met with me a couple weeks ago, she said, you know, the formal meeting with the reasonable accommodations counselor who's for the federal government, didn't happen yet, but she says, you know, what can I do? First of all, she says, why do you need this? And I mean, she knows I have a brain injury. She's really supposed to know. I mean, technically, when you apply for reasonable accommodation, you provide your medical records to the reasonable accommodation people, okay? And they tell your boss what your limitations are. But they're not supposed to really tell them. They're not really supposed to talk about your diagnosis. Okay. Now, I'm open about the fact they've had a brain injury. And the thing is, I think that people see that I can do anything anybody can do in this department. Okay. I just can't do it as fast. I can't do as much of it in as short of time. Okay. But I can do anything, and I put out really good reports. But I can't see. I can't work fast. And, and so anyway,
I don't think any of you should, brain injury or not, that I don't know why this because, and first of all, you said when you were reading the legalese on it, it said you could ask for less work, but what you said before, which is true, when you're two down, off and on for almost 2 years, two down and you're doing that much more work, you said you're not asking for doing less work. You're asking to do what the job description, description describes as a reasonable amount of work or the required amount of work to be able to qualify for the job that you took. So somewhere after that, that's not asking for less work. It's asking for the work that you applied for on the job that you applied for and got, and they're doubling down because for whatever reason, can't find the people, can't find the money, don't want to, sloppy. They're not hiring the other two that are needed to make everybody be working reasonable hours. You know, as a patient, my fear in that is not of you, it's of that entire system, because everybody working that amount of time over hours, whether they can do it in 8 to 5 and it takes you the weekends and a few evenings to do it, you're all getting more work than is in your job description. That promotes being tired, which promotes being sloppy, which is really scary for us, the patients, and the quality of care. And that has nothing to do with you personally or your brain injury. I don't think that you are asking for less work. You're asking for the work load that was agreed upon when you took that full-time job.
Yes.
So I don't think it's...
We are kind of running short on time, but I do want to kind of... I mean, I have a listing of... I have a document in front of me from Job Accommodation Network, and it's called, if you want to look it up, The website is...
I've got that in the program notes.
Oh, you do? Okay, so Job Accommodation Network. Okay. So this is a document I have from that, and it's talking about employees with brain injuries and some of the reasonable accommodations. So I'm just going to kind of go through some of these, and I'm going to skip the physical limitations and the visual problems because I don't have that, okay? So, some of that's more obvious, like, you know, ramps and handrails and things like that, and then visual problems, and you have things in bigger print and things like that. All right, but all right. Maintaining stamina during the workday is a problem for me. Okay, so, so these are some that they list, okay? Permit flexible scheduling, like allow longer or more frequent work breaks, okay? Provide a self-paced workload, okay? Provide a supportive environment, a supportive employment environment with job coaches, okay? So that's one thing I asked her. I said, you know, if I work more than 55 hours in a particular week, could I meet with somebody the next week and just to kind of, you know, sometimes I get stuck on a case, okay, and I'm stubborn and I keep working on it when maybe I just need another pair of eyes to look at it, that sort of thing. And, you know, sometimes because I have problems with my executive functioning, okay, it's not that I can't do my work, it's the fact that it's more like organizing, planning, sequencing, prioritizing, okay, that's where I struggle, okay. So, you know, I sometimes don't know when to let something go. When is it good enough? Okay. and do I really need to worry about this? Is this something, you know, I've got the main diagnosis, but I see something else. You know, is this something that do I really need to work this up? Is it important or not? That sort of thing. So we do show each other cases, but I don't want to be showing people more than what other people are showing me, okay? But, you know, I asked if, you know, I mean, I don't want to go into what we talked about, okay? So another thing you could do is allow the employee to work from home during part of the day. That's not an option for me, but provide for job sharing opportunities, okay? So that's not available for me, but that's another thing that could be done, or part-time work schedule rather than full-time. So that would be maintaining stamina during the workday. Okay, the other area, the next area is maintaining concentration. So one would be to reduce distractions in the work area. And one of the things I do is I close my door. If there's, you know, my office suite is actually, there's really only two of us time now out of five offices. And The other three are crossed the other way, okay? But if there's discussion or whatever, I'll close my door, okay? And sometimes I'll put in earplugs if I'm, you know, hearing somebody talk on the telephone or something like that. So reduce the distractions. If you're like in an like space enclosures. Like if you're working in a cubicle in a big section, I don't know that I could ever do that as a person with brain injury. But that would be, you know,
me either.
Allow for use of white noise or environmental sound machines. And I don't do that, but I do have this, I found an app. It's called Focus at Will. And I pay a dollar a week for the year, okay? And it's music that's supposed to help you pay attention, okay? It's designed to help you pay attention, to help you focus. And I do find that I stay on task a lot longer if I'm listening to that music, okay? So some soothing music, especially if I play it in on my headphones. That really helps because it kind of reduces the chatter of this other voice in my head. You know,
yeah.
I mean by the other voice in my head, okay.
I do,
and I think with the
yeah.
injury, I think with a person with a brain injury, that other voice, that static, that chatter, can be really loud. Okay, I mean,
yeah,
I'm not talking voices in my head like, you know, someone who's schizophrenic, but there's
no.
You know, this other. Okay, and as a person with brain injury, sometimes I have trouble, shutting that down, and the music really helps. And it has to be music without words. Okay. Plan for an uninterrupted work time. So I've got this thing that I do. I set a timer for 25 minutes, okay, and I work solid for 25 minutes, okay, and then 5 minutes, and then the timer ends, and I get a 5 minute break. It's called a Pomodoro timer, and it's mm-hmm. a 25 minutes work, 5 minutes break. And I've talked about it before, so. I really, once I put that Pomodoro, started it, I'm really saying I'm not going to allow myself to get distracted. And if I do, I have to start the Pomodoro all over again. And I don't give myself credit for it. Okay. So I plan for uninterrupted work time. Another thing that can be done is to restructure the job to include only essential functions. So that's one thing that's one thing that's being done. This reasonable accommodations guy is asking my service chief to say, okay, what functions of my job are essential and what functions are not, okay? And he says she can't say everything's essential. Okay, so I'm medical director of blood bank. Nobody else is really prepared to do that, so that would be essential, okay? But I'm on the research development committee for the hospital. Somebody else can do that. In fact, I have an alternate. And he could do that, and I could become his alternate, or I could be taken it off that research development committee, you know, entirely. It's not an essential function of my job, that sort of thing.
Well, and that transcription, that's a different job description.
Yeah.
I don't think that's essential to your job description.
Yes, but we don't have anybody to do it. Problem. Okay. And so, like, the billing and coding... The billing and coding I shouldn't have to do either, okay?
Right,
but all the pathologists do it on their own because we don't have the people to do it, okay? And so, but technically I shouldn't have to, okay?
No,
all right, so then,
I know.
So then I'm going to go to the next section, which is difficulty staying organized and meeting deadlines. So making daily to-do lists and checking off items as they're completed. So one of the most valuable things that I need to do, you know, either before I go home or first thing in the morning, kind of look at my desk, you know, kind of develop a plan of attack for the day. And I try to make sure that I've looked at everything on my desk and made a decision about, you know, in what order am I going to do this? Because if something stays covered, I can completely blank out and forget that it exists, okay? So I've got to kind of, make a notation, you know, on a paper that I do keep in front of me and say, okay, this is the order I'm going to do things, okay? I've already talked about using timers. That helps me because if I have a card case, it's like time suspends. It's like I could be thinking about the case for an hour, okay, and just basically be thinking the same 5 minutes of thoughts over and over again, prize that the hour has passed. And I'm like, where did the time go? So that's one thing that I do. If I'm just dealing with easy cases, I don't set the timer, okay? But if I feel like if something's going to take me like more than 5 minutes, you know, then I'm like, okay, I set the timer just to make sure, the 5 minute timer, just to make sure that I'm making progress. That every time that rings, I've made some progress. And if I haven't made progress, what do I need? Okay, do I need to order a stain? Do I need to order extra cuts? Do I need to show somebody, you know, do I need to get, So I have a paper calendar. I also keep track of appointments on my phone, but really a paper calendar is what I need at my desk at my work to keep track of meetings. okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then one thing would be to assign a mentor to help employee determining goals and provide daily guidance, which they're unwilling to give to me. But I don't really need it. I don't really need it most of the time. I just need it, you know, and like I could have used it, you know, in mid-January. There was a moment I could have used it at the end of February. And in mid-May, I could have used it, okay? So it's not like I need it every day or every week. But there are times when things, you know, when things start to back up and I could use a little bit of extra input. Or I could say, another thing is, I'm gonna kind of pass on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, another thing is to schedule weekly meetings with a supervisor, manager, or mentor to determine if goals are being met. Well, my boss, my service chief, says she's not willing to do that. Okay. So anyway, now the next category is memory deficit. So I have, you know, I have impairment in short-term and long-term memory. Okay. And so I have a system of keeping track of what I'm doing, okay? And, you know, some people don't even write anything on the case, and they put it aside, and when they pick it up, they already know what kind of thinking they've already done on the case. Well, I write down the progression of my thoughts, okay? And
sure.
Then, you know, what do I need to figure out? Do I need to look the procedure note up in the medical record? I make myself, you know, kind of like a little trail of thoughts, okay, so that I can, you know, remind myself what I've done, what I'm considering, question mark, you know, the deep margin, okay, that sort of thing, okay. Another thing is to, like, for a meeting, to allow tape recording of the meetings. Okay, or written minutes of each meeting. So one of the things that was in my accommodation is that if I'm being given constructive or negative feedback, that either that be recorded or it be followed up with a written documentation to make sure that I have fully understand. Okay. Because especially with my old boss, who's now temporarily gone at least, you know, he would get really intense, okay? And so, you know, sometimes yell and scream, okay? And it's usually not directly about the job, okay? But basically, when something, you know, it had to do with the processor. We normally have two processors, okay? We only had one in December, and he had a problem with how I used the one, okay? And he thought, okay. And it was a procedural thing. It wasn't, you know, it was completely, had really nothing directly to do with my job or the quality of my work, okay? But, you know, he yelled and screamed at me, and so then I didn't fully understand what the issue was. Okay, so like 2 weeks later, you know, anyway, 2 weeks later, there was something else that happened, and he goes, "Didn't I explain this to you?" He comes in, and I'm like, "I really didn't get that." Okay, it was so intense. Okay,
yeah,
it was like my brain was in shock. Okay, and I wasn't able, like, when I'm overwhelmed with, like, the negative emotion, just trying to stay, you know, keep from crying. Just, you know, when you're feeling strong emotions, your cortex is not fully getting everything, okay? It happens to normal people, too, right? But for a person with brain injury, it's even worse. It's like 5 times worse, okay?
Yeah.
So so that's one of the other things, is that the feedback be given written and or recorded so that I can fully understand. And it's not that I can't be corrected. I want to be corrected. Okay. I will, you know, if you present to me a problem, I want to understand the problem so that I can deal with it. Okay. I'm correctable. I'm open to correction, but I'm not open to demeaning or yelling or screaming. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, problem solving deficit. Okay. So, like having a flow chart. So, you know, there's this new type of testing that we're now doing on prostate biopsies, and there's a, you know, quite a few steps involved. You know, when the oncologist says, you know, hey, I want to do this extra testing. So I developed this little checklist to make sure that I got all this, you know, and I follow it, okay? Box, 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 okay? And to make sure that I got it all right, okay? Because the first couple times I went through it, I felt like I was swimming. Like I didn't, you know, what's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? It really helped for me to make this little series of steps a little on this little card, and so that I could just kind of mentally check off to make sure that I've done everything. The demographic sheet, the patient report, the last clinic note, the requisition, the block, okay? Choose a block and then put it all, you know, and then you give it to the office with everything. So, working effectively with supervisors. One of the important things about people with brain injuries, they tend to get discouraged, okay? And so providing positive praise and reinforcement is really important. And that's one thing that I have not consistently gotten. You know, I was in Kansas City beginning in June to go to pathology meeting, and my old service chief was there. And at lunch, he told the person sitting between us, I consider it one of my greatest failures as chief that Dr. Romanis left us, that I wasn't able to keep her. And it just felt so good because here I feel like I'm the stepchild, okay? But there I was esteemed. You know, I wasn't asked to function beyond my capability, okay? And I did fully adapt to the job, especially after I did my cognitive rehab a few years into the job. You know, what little glitches I had really were completely gone, okay, after I did the cognitive rehab. But despite my cognitive rehab here, you know, I can't handle when people leave or gone for weeks and months, for months at a time. So develop strategies to deal with problems before they arise. Establish written long-term and short-term goals. Write clear expectations of responsibilities and consequences of not meeting them. Provide written work agreements. That's one of the under this set of accommodations for working effectively with supervisors. And then difficulty handling stress and emotions. So I am not, you know, an anxiety-prone person normally, okay? But when I feel overwhelmed, anxiety does impact my, the feeling of anxiety that I, you know, that I have more to do than I can handle, okay, that really does start to impact my ability to use my brain the most effectively. So I have to do like active quieting, okay, like take 5 minutes, you know, just to close my eyes and maybe just listen to music or to, you know, turn off the lights, okay, and just sit there for 5 minutes, okay, do some deep breathing, take a five-minute walk in the hall, that sort of thing, and that kind of helps. So the tension that I feel in my mind gets stored in my body, okay, and unless the tension is dissipated from my body, then my mind, you know, it's like my mind can't relax either. So what I was told is repetitive physical activity, okay? So like taking a walk, okay, helps to kind of, you know, get rid of the stress, okay? So sometimes I can't quiet just by being still. Sometimes I have to quiet by discharging energy, like by walking, okay? Going to read you this other thing in this book by Larry. When overloaded, and each one has strategies to prevent and fix the problem. But even these proficient copers have broken down under sufficient stress. Okay. It's an additional, I'm skipping forward, an additional reminder that these are not physiologically recovered brains, but rather broken ones with stress tolerance that can never be normal. So my stress tolerance will never be equal that of my colleagues, okay? I'm like the canary in the coal mine. If there's too much work for the whole department, it's my performance that's going to fall out first, okay? So because the recoverers understand the need to proactively minimize stress because they operate effectively only in a fairly narrow range of stress. Okay, so, I am physically strong. I don't get sick very often. There's been COVID in my house twice since the pandemic started. My husband's son got it, and then my niece who lives in my house got it, and I didn't get sick. So, I have good physical stamina. It's more like mental stamina that I have difficulty with. So another thing is to provide training to coworkers, and I think that may be necessary for me to ask because obviously my supervisor doesn't understand, okay? Another thing is, it's after 11, and we're almost the way through this list anyway, but you kind of get the idea. So I've asked, I was asking for a delayed start tour duty. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. I did ask for, the ability to close my door for 30 minutes, like at lunchtime. And, I put a do not disturb sign on my door, that sort of thing. So, I haven't actually done it yet. Usually I just wait till the end, like I wait till the end of my tour and then I close my door for half an hour. Like I did that today. I closed my door for half an hour. I have this pillow that it's a lap pillow that you would use on the airplane. It blows up. It's like a pillow that I can put on the desk and put my face on it. And so I did that and I listened to music. So I'm using that strategy more these days to kind of help me get that extra boost so that I'm not wasting time, just looking at my work. Because if my mind is not there, I can have a conversation with somebody, but I can't really do any diagnostic stuff, okay? Until I'm ready. I know when my mind is ready to do work. Okay. So basically I'm going to be, trying to be more diligent about taking the rest I need when I need it. Okay. So I'm allowed to take half an hour for lunch. I'm allowed to take 2 15-minute breaks. And if I need to, I will close my door and take, a solid break. Where normally, I just work straight with all of us. We never actually take half an hour off for lunch or take a 15-minute break. We just work straight through. But I'm learning to be, that I need to do this in order to be disciplined about rest. So, and maybe that's all the accommodation that I'm going to get. Who knows? We'll see. Where the regional accommodations officer says that my service chief is going to need to become creative since she said no to everything else. So about, as far as limiting my work hours and things like that or limiting the load, she said absolutely not. So, but in any case, I do have a lawyer, an employment lawyer for disability, and, she's kind of standing ready. She's kind of standing ready to insert herself if or when I need it. So
I think that's important, and I know that you have to go. But one of the things you read back at the beginning about supportive work environment, all of that stuff in there had to do with what the person with the disability is supposed to do, and I don't know. It seems like that attorney is a good idea. A supportive work environment, you know, you asking for some accommodations that are uber reasonable, because the problem is their system, and that could be documented by, well, a comparison, say, of Kansas City, the amount of whatever your job description said, you know, when you went to work there and what it entails now, the amount of overflow and extra job descriptions that suddenly got lumped into yours. And then, you know, we have it on tape from another show about you getting yelled and screamed at that night for something that was super arbitrary. And I remember saying that night, that person obviously had a problem of their own going on, because nobody gets that angry. You'd think he had the brain injury, because nobody gets that angry and abusive in tone, deed, and word over something as minuscule as what that person got upset about. And then you asking for these accommodations to do the impossible is really unreasonable. It's like, you don't do your job. The system's broken. You're expecting an you know, we're talking about reasonable accommodations. They're having unreasonable expectations. And so, I don't know, I think I would play back a couple of those other things. And if you don't have it in writing or on tape, I think I would maybe visit with that person again and have it on tape when they're telling you no to these things that are in violation of the ADA.
So this is a statement that I made, okay? Overwork produces disability for me, okay? So I have cognitive impairments. I have my workarounds. I have my compensation strategies. And I can handle a normal workload, and it doesn't produce functional disability. I just have to work longer, okay? But overwork produces disability for me, okay? That's when so I always function in low-speed mode when I'm working as a pathologist, doing my grossing or microscopic work, because it is the only speed at which I have full possession of all my faculties, okay? It's also the only speed at which I have functional consistency. So where the others can put their pedal to the metal, I can't. I have to function at low speed in order to work as a professional, to do professional work. And so that's, anyway, I really got to go.
I know you do. I wish you good luck. Keep in touch and let me know how that goes. And can you say again for anybody who might be having a similar problem, the kind of attorney that, you know, it's one thing to know that the ADA provisions are out there, but what's the kind of attorney that you get?
So
you
don't want to ask for a disability attorney, because the disability attorneys are really more about how you get, like, disability, payment
Social
for disability.
Security.
Anything that they're interested in. They're really not interested to help you stick up for your rights at work, okay? So the person I found, the group I found, and I was fortunate to find them, is a group that deals with employment law. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. I just wanted you to repeat that. Good.
An employment lawyer. Okay.
Got it.
So, so in any case, okay. Well, anyway, I got to go, Kim.
I know. Best of luck to you, and let us know how it goes.
Okay.
And thanks for coming on tonight. This is important. Important stuff. So keep us in the loop, and thank you.
Okay. All right. Bye, Kim. Bye, everybody.
All right. Good night. All right. Thanks. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. That was Dr. Maria Romanis, and she had to leave early tonight because she's at work. Let's see, it's 11:15 at night where she's at. And I don't know how many people you know that are typically in an 8 to 5 job that are still at work at 11 p.m., but she's been on the show, if you came in late, like I said, many, many times, and she's always working on a weekend or later, you know, maybe gone home for dinner and then gone back. She did bring up, you know, I brought up the gas, and she said she lived close by. That is lucky for her. And she mentioned that the gas wasn't really an issue, like having a two-hour drive. But you know what is an issue is time off, leisure time, self-care, 2 hours with your family, you know, time. It's time that's getting taken away that you're not getting taken back. So, you know, like I said, in my opinion, it's a scary situation. She got the same degree, got through medical school, and she was going to be, I wish I would have asked her. It was a neurologist. I believe she was going to be a doctor of neurology. And that was a more complex curriculum after she had her accident and her brain injury and switched to being a doctor of pathology. But she still went to medical school and is equally educated to any doctor of pathology after she got her brain injury. She went through the program and again has 16 years of experience. And so if you are thinking about going back to work, again, on my show page, which you can find at braininjuryradio.com or any of the many places that I posted it across social media in groups or on my own website, inaflash.org, under the show page. If you click on Dr. Maria, it's the show from tonight, I think the date's the 22nd of June, you will find a couple of sources. One of them would be adata.org/reasonable-accommodations-workplace. And that's all written down. You don't have to worry about it right there in the program notes, loud and clear. A number, 1-800-949-4232. Which is the ADA National Network, or the Job Accommodation Line. And that website is Ask Jan, askjan.org. You can read about job accommodations, or you can call 1-800-526-7234. So if you're wanting to go back to work after your brain injury and you want to know, you know, you're afraid you won't be able to go back to work, afraid that your skill set is burnt, and you couldn't do the things that you did before. That's me. I did learn when I came here to do radio that really wasn't the case. I still had my skill set. I just couldn't do what I did before. But a lot of the aspects of that skill set, networking, educating, interviewing, research, training, hiring, supervising, all of those things I've done here for over 12 years on Brain Injury Radio. Those were things that I did back in my 25-plus year career. But there were elements of that I couldn't do anymore. And when I left that job, I was bleak. That's a time when a lot of people have some pretty dark thoughts and think they see a dark hole in front of them without any hope and make a permanent decision for what could be a temporary problem. And that's a shame because we just don't realize yet how our skill set could be tweaked and enable us to be able to work. Les Paul, our second and fourth Tuesday longtime host, is another example of that. He tried like heck to get a job. He's got his own story. I'm not going to share. It's been shared on tape, but he wound up going to work at an independent living center, and that is not a place to live. They do call it that, so it gets confusing. But the independent living center in this instance that I'm talking about where Les Paul works is simply a resource center for people with disabilities. It might be offering classes. It might be giving information like what I just gave. They've got a myriad of programs that can help with job training or questions. Or if you have a problem like Dr. Maria is having, they might be able to refer you to a good employment attorney. Again, she made an important distinction I'd like to make again, and that is if you look for disability law, brain injury law, a lot of times they're going to be focused on getting you disability, getting you on SSI or SSDI disability because you cannot work. And what you're wanting to make clear, if you do get a hold of an attorney like that, is that isn't what you're wanting. You're wanting the opposite, the antithesis, and that is that you do want to work. But the place that you're working for has unreasonable expectations, doesn't have a supportive work environment, and is in violation with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And again, you can save yourself a little money by looking up those websites that I've got listed that tells you what reasonable accommodations are. And if a workplace tells you, we're not going to do that, we're not going to do that for you. Or in Dr. Maria's case, they're saying, and it's funny because she works as a pathologist in a government, and so interesting that the government hospital and the person who's the acting chief in this government hospital is clueless or blinded because she's not doing her job and is in a temporarily in charge and wants to save her own face, that she's ignoring a national act meant to protect people with disabilities who are able to work. And there has been no indication whatsoever that Dr. Maria can't do the job that she signed up for, because she's been doing it 16 years. One in one state where the employment was stable and no turnover and things were run in a certain way, and now down in another location, been massive turnover and employee dissatisfaction the whole time I've known her, the whole 7 years she's been down there. So they've got some structural issues, and unfortunately the person with the disability is playing pin the tail on the donkey, and it has nothing to do with their disability. It has a lot to do with the mismanagement and not playing ball with the Americans with Disability Act. And that, people, put us all as patients in jeopardy. Not because someone like Dr. Maria with a brain injury is working, because she is. You heard all of the compensatory strategies she was talking about that she does to be more mindful, to not make mistakes. And people without a brain injury that have double the workload and job description that they planned on when they took the job, and being short a couple people for something as serious as pathology. You know, when you get a diagnosis that you've got cancer or you don't, that's a pretty big deal. So, you know, this is everyone, everybody was clamoring for wanting Obamacare and wanting national health care and blah, 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 blah. Well, I want to tell you something. There were some flaws with private insurance, but not near as many flaws as with government-sponsored insurance, which would be the VA, Medicare, Medicaid. You were promised a lot of things under that system, and one of them is that care would not be rationed, and care is absolutely being rationed. You were promised it would be cheaper, or you had the impression that you would get national health care and it would be free. Well, you know what kind of quality of care you get for free? You get a government hospital who's been short-staffed by two people for 2 years, putting an extra load on the people who are there with or without a brain injury, double downing on their job description, adding two other job descriptions, being the coder and the transcriptionist, which was never part of their job description, and you're going to see mistakes made. And those mistakes are on you or your loved one, and it's not acceptable. And so that is my commentary. I wish Dr. Maria good luck, and encourage you, if you want to work and you've had a brain injury, to do so. And we've had talk before on whether a person should tell or not when they apply for a job. If you don't need accommodations, frankly, I don't, and this is just me, I'm not telling anybody to do this. A lot of people think it's a good idea to be honest. I wouldn't tell myself. Luckily, I'm at Brain Injury Radio, so I was busted. He heard me doing an interview and knew. But as you see, that supervisor's turning the table on her, that because she can't do 80 hours a week worth of work from 8 to 5 like the other employees, but she is doing it on weekends and nights like tonight at 11 o'clock at night, going back to the hospital, she is doing it, but slower, so she's putting in more hours. You know, to turn the table when there's a shortage of help for 2 years and not correct the flaw in the system, then we get around to that finger-pointing thing. It's the person with the brain injury's fault. They're the easiest person to blame because they have a disability. So one of the things I haven't heard a lot of, you know, we've been hearing a lot, you know, I'll use the word woke. We've been hearing a lot of whatever it is the news is calling woke, having to do with racism, sexuality, that type of thing. I haven't heard a lot about disability, people with disability, which would be right there along with seniors who are considered vulnerable groups, who have been discriminated against, people with disability and seniors. they treat seniors like they're kids, don't feel like they need to clue them in on everything, or they can take a shortcut, talk fast, make you feel stupid for asking a question. They do that for people with disabilities. So if we're going to put a lot of weight on what kind of sex somebody identifies with, or racism, Me Too, all of that stuff, not saying there's anything wrong with that, but here for this audience, equal weighting, because this levels the playing field. No matter what you identify with, what color you are, what religion you are, disability can come knocking on your door. So, and if you don't die prematurely, you're going to age and you'll be a senior, or know a senior, or have one in your life. And so we need to be out there during this year of elections and make some demands that, you know, rattle some sabers like the other groups are in your disability support group or community, or in blogging that you do, or on a podcast that you might do, or speaking engagements if you do them, newsletters if you write them, is call the question. While we're talking about these things on news every night, how often have you heard them talking about discrimination against seniors, discrimination against people with disabilities, compared to the other things that you hear constantly every time you turn on the TV, every time you turn on news radio, something about anytime you turn on a podcast, you know, something about those topics, but not about disability, not about brain injury, not about TBI, not about post-traumatic stress, not about seniors. And those groups are, like I said, I won't even say equally weighted, even more weighted than the other groups, because the groups I just mentioned include all of the groups. It's not a discriminator. Anybody can have a disability. Maria, me, most of the people that listen here, the guy that founded the network, we all were who we were before, got up one day, and our life was changed forever. In some cases by an accident, car accident, a fall, domestic abuse, a stroke, an aneurysm, a concussion, changed forever. And some people can afford, if they're able to get disability, it does take an average of 2.5 years. Again, another government program where you don't just apply and they deal with it. Hurry up and wait has been the government's motto for years. But even worse now. So, you know, you're looking at a couple and a half years, and very few people, unless it's super obvious, get disability on their first crack at it. They have to go through an appeal. That takes about another year. So you might be looking at 3 years. You know, you had a job, you were supporting yourself, and you might be looking at up to 3 years or longer. Even if your disability claim prevailed, to be able to get a payout. And then if you use an attorney, they're going to take a third of that, which would be like 3 years of your income and projected income that you won't be making, and then a third of that being taken by the attorneys that help you get the disability. Tough. It's a tough deal. But definitely, I want to thank Dr. Maria Romanis for working, and talking to us about reasonable accommodations, me having the opportunity to give you some resources about finding out about what is a reasonable accommodation. So, gee, under these circumstances, could I go back to work? Or if I'm in a job and I'm struggling, can I approach my employer and say, hey, I was reading this fact sheet under the ADA site, Americans with Disability Act, if you're not familiar with it, and it talks about these things called reasonable accommodations in the workplace. And I saw and put a check mark or underline the ones that you think apply and carry that piece of paper in. And just say you were talking to a friend who works in an independent living center or who is an employment attorney. Play dumb. They think we are a lot of the time. And read those bullet points and make sure it says the ADA. Don't forget the front page that says ADA accommodation sheet on there, because that can really scare people right, because they don't really want to tangle. On the other hand, they can be completely ignorant to it, like Maria's supervisor, or not believe that a person would pursue challenging them. All kinds of things, looking for loopholes around it, around the ADA, and make up, that you were really, smooching with someone at the water cooler or being inappropriate. We hear all kinds of excuses on TV and in politics too. And that is another thing. We've heard about some government aspects. And under the Americans with Disability Act, that's another one where they can try to mitigate your legitimate concerns and issues by trying to set you up that perhaps, as Maria's supervisor was trying to say, that she wasn't doing her job, she wasn't doing her job, getting her work done from 8 to 5 like everyone else. Or perhaps that, now they did not do this with Maria, but with other people, that inappropriate behavior or job performance issues, and make up a reason as a loophole around the ADA Act. And when you let them know you are familiar with an attorney and you are familiar with the provision in the ADA Act of the reasonable accommodations in the workplace, then it's like anything else. When a company or a person thinks that you don't know anything and they can bully you and push you around and they have a personal motive for doing it, they will. But if you're one of those people who seems like you know something and you might be kind of dangerous and threaten their pole position, because I doubt that supervisor's boss would be very happy if they had an employment attorney calling and asking questions and talking about bringing an ADA suit against their company, and with her citing the accommodations that are considered reasonable that she asked for, and this manager said, no, I can't spend a half hour with you a week or an hour with you a week doing a review, when they are expecting such unreasonable work hours, not bothering to fill the slots of, you know, the two people short it takes to make the boat smooth sailing there in the pathology department. They just dumping it on other people to do. You know, I've seen that happen across corporate America in different areas of work where they just eliminate a job description. You know, in this case, maybe it would be a coder. She said they don't have a coder, the insurance codes and so forth to submit. And transcriptionists, they haven't had one of those. You know, those are job descriptions in and of themselves. And maybe a company wants to save a buck and they eliminate a job description or two and divide that work and throw it on the lap of people who came to work under a different job description. In this case, it was to be a doctor, pathology. Those things really need to be corrected, especially when it comes to healthcare. Especially when it comes to healthcare. I think I'm going to play a couple tunes. We got 15 minutes left. I had written down that I was going to talk to you about heat exhaustion versus heat stroke. It's next Tuesday, I believe, that is the first day of summer. And Simon will be back. He was gone last month. My last week of each month co-host, Simon Lewis, I believe he's going to be back next Wednesday. He's been having some health issues, and hopefully he will be, and we can squeeze this in then for that show, because it would kind of go hand in hand with what we were going to talk about. But again, like I said, for the last week, we've been at 109 degree heat index, and it's been super tough. Heat stroke can be dangerous and even fatal. And, you know, we were talking about concussion a couple of weeks ago, or lots of times, saying that once we have that concussion, we don't think properly. We're not in our right mind. And that happens when we're overheated. We're not in our right mind. And so we often don't do the things that we would need to in order to save our lives. And so I'm going to talk to you next week, I guess. It'll be one day into being officially summer, where I'm sure more of this weather that's been going on will be happening, and talk to you a little bit about the difference between heat exhaustion and heat stroke. I've suffered from heat exhaustion before, and it is no fun. So be sure to come back, and we'll deal with this at the beginning of next week's show with Simon. Again, I want to thank Dr. Maria for being on the show tonight. And don't blame her that she had to cut out of here early because she was at work. Funny, she was back at work at 11:15 at night while we're talking about work accommodations after brain injury. Not funny. Not funny, but ironic. Ironic funny, I guess. So I will keep my notes from the article I read. And in the meantime, hydrate. Between now and next week, when we go through these, this material that I have for you, make sure that you're hydrating. Make sure you're in the shade. Wear a hat so your head doesn't get baked. I'll give you a couple of those things right now. And try not to be out in the heat. Or if you have to be, to take a lot of breaks to cool off and get your core body temperature right. And with that, some of you have seen that my husband and I got a new puppy, Eddie. And if you're friends with me on Facebook, you've seen tons of pictures. And I want you to notice that in tonight's show, you haven't heard a peep out of him, which is incredible. He's in a little playpen next to me, and he's been sleeping for the whole show like a good boy. He hasn't been up screaming and crying. Watch one of these next week or the week after. We'll get it. And I remember 8 years ago when we got Tino, and he was a baby. I know that somewhere back in the archives and shows I did 8 years ago, he spoke as a baby on the air around the world. And I was concerned with how, I don't want to say his name too loud, I'll wake him up, how our new little guy might have been screaming and on air around the world tonight, but not tonight. And so that's a good thing. He was a really good boy tonight, and I'm happy for that. So, like I said, if you are a friend of mine on Facebook, you've probably seen pictures of him, and he's just a little doll, a miniature. He's called a shaded cream miniature dachshund, and he's about 2.5 pounds, little teeny guy. So we're on day 5, or was that yesterday? We got him Friday. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're on day 6. And he's had a lot, and so have we, been 8 years since we've had a baby, to adjust to. Him, 2 other dogs, new parents, new house, new yard, new sleeping arrangement for all of us. So, been very tired. And I guess that's it. We got about 10 minutes to go, but happy Father's Day. I think I wished you guys happy Father's Day last Wednesday show when it was coming up, but I hope you enjoyed Father's Day now that we're after the fact. And and Juneteenth, my husband appreciated the extra day off of his government job, not getting any sleep. The first 2 nights we had the puppy, he came from a litter environment, so he was sleeping on top of and in a pile with 6 other puppies, and the mom puppy and the dad puppy and the grandma puppy, and then got whisked away to be by himself, because when he started crying, the other 2 dogs split. They're like, Jesus, we can't sleep and listen to that wailing and screaming. So the poor little guy was all alone. And so I've got some advice for any new puppy owners. Last week was a wonderful show. It was Kevin was on, and we were talking about service dogs for PTSD, people with PTSD, whether it's a veteran, a Gold Star family, first responder, or anyone else who has suffered from PTSD. I encourage you to go back and listen to last week's show and check that out. I think I even have the website right here. Sorry, it's been a week. Oh, let me go to my own webpage and give you that. It's in the, it's in the braininjuryradio.com website under On Demand. It's also on demand in inaflash.org. But I want to give you the website. It was just a super excellent show, Warhawk. Kevin Warhawk Doncaster. And you can check out warhawkptsdservicedogs.org. But do check out that show from last week. It was called Warhawk Service Dogs. And so it must have been, well, it was last Wednesday. So be at the top of my list under the shows tab at inaflash.org or in the on-demand to last week's show at braininjuryradio.com. And there's a lot of things that you can do to help. Let's say that you're not looking for, you don't want the pressure of the pay to job, and maybe you're on disability. You needed to be on disability and you are, but you're looking for your sense of purpose and you love animals. The way that they've got this working, and I don't have time to talk about it tonight except to say go back and listen to the show, is there are many ways that you can help as a volunteer with service animals all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. He's got a system that's not brick and mortar. They actually work with people in every state, you know, in any state. In fact, the goal is getting dogs in all 50 states and New Zealand, some allies that supported our forces, and quite a few other places. Anyway, just want to plug that show again because it was such a good show. I've done shows before about service animals for veterans, and Kevin is a veteran, but not as inclusive as this one. Normally the dogs have been only for the veterans. And in this case, it's people with PTSD. And it starts veterans, first responders, Gold Star families, and other people who suffer from PTSD. And just a wonderful organization. Kevin is a great guy. Make sure to check out that show. Say a prayer for Dr. Maria, who is my guest tonight, Dr. Maria Romanis, that they get their stuff together and don't do something less than ethical to her because they aren't doing their job. And with that, she talked about music that was relaxing, that didn't have words. And so I'm going to play us out tonight with a Native American band called Brulé. That's B-R-U-L-E, Brulé. They're at brulerecords.com, and this is the title cut off of Nicole Night Tree. It features her flute, and I just love the rain stick. I've got a rain stick, and this is a very cool, relaxing song. They've got a lot of albums. I highly recommend that you check them out for relaxation type music. And then right after that, I'm going to play a song by The, that's T-H-E-E, the letter R, insane.com, TheRinsane.com. And that is the sponsor, TBI Survivor Network. As you know, Craig has funded us by his band for the last 15 years. They were going to do a final tour, got cut off, actually, by COVID. But they did finish their three-album final tour set, and he had a bunch of records before that. And they're all posted, and they're going to be taken down soon. They were for sale for a long time, but he's going to take them all down soon. And they won't be available anymore. But instead, what he's doing is he's got them out there for free downloads up until he takes them down. So VRinsane.com. So first, I'm going to play Brulé Night Tree, and then I'm going to play a song by VR Insane. Check them out. Check out our independent artists of all kinds. They're working hard, and our self-employed mom-and-pop type operations. I don't think we want to be a country of big box stores and neon lights from fast food. Go back to appreciating some of the more simple things. Good night, and God bless everyone. I'll see you next Wednesday night.
contemplate about the things I do. Well, I can't seem to recognize. Why can't I see beyond these eyes? And I think I need a savior like you. One who talks to me, someone who sees everything I see. Fill my